Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Fellas, I'm ready to get up and do my thing. I want to get into it, man, you know. Like, you know I'm the man, don't you? Can I count it off? 1, 2, 3, 4.
You're listening to the Church Politics Podcast with Michael Ware and Justin Gibney, where you can get in-depth political analysis from a Christian worldview. Transcend partisanship and political ideology with us as we seek true discipleship in the public square.
This is the Church Politics Podcast with Michael Ware and Justin Gibney. We have a special episode this week, Justin. I'm excited about it.
I'm really excited as well. I must admit, this is going to be a good interview, a good episode, a treat for everybody. I felt a little excluded because you were actually recording in the pristine U.S. Senate studio with our guest. And in comparison, I felt like I was in a recording from my mother's water damaged basement or something. But it was good because it's not every day that you get to speak with two people in the most important deliberative body in the world. And so Church Politics was excited about this interview.
Yeah. So, you know, it all came together so quickly. We found out that we had the opportunity and the interest on behalf of Senator James Lankford from Oklahoma and Senator Chris Coons of Delaware. They've been doing a little round of interviews following the National Prayer Breakfast, because it was announced that they'll be co-chairing the 2019 National Prayer Breakfast. And we were able to arrange the details so that, you know, we were recording an interview, you know, 3 or 4 days after we found out it was a possibility. And so, you know, want to thank the senator's staff, obviously thank the senators themselves. They were rushed to the studio after roll call votes and then had to rush back to the floor for more votes. And so we're grateful that we got to have a conversation, not just a conversation. I think it's a really good one that'll be helpful to all of our listeners out there. It was helpful to me for sure. Justin, we'll talk a bit more about the interview after we air it, and we're going to get right to it. But anything you want to say to kind of set the stage?
Sure. Just, you know, Church Politics is focused on the intersection between faith and politics. And while faith is often, you know, a talking point for many politicians, and we'll be charitable about the veracity of that, it's often difficult sometimes to see where it actually comes into play. But we had the opportunity to speak to two senators whose faith is visible, and you'll hear it in the conversation.
Yeah. And just before we jump in, I do want to note one thing that was special about recording the interview is it was actually the day that Billy Graham was lying in honor in the Capitol Rotunda. So
that's right.
There were just people just lined up around the Capitol to honor Billy. And so it was a special moment just to see all of that. It was really quite a scene. And then before we jump into the interview, I just want to we are so grateful for our listeners. This is we're now almost a year into the Church Politics Podcast. If you are a loyal listener, maybe if you're just checking in for the first time, we're in this for the long haul. What would be helpful is if you would subscribe to this podcast, so you make sure you get it every week on iTunes or on any of the podcasts providers. And then we would also ask you to review the podcast. It would really help us as we're spreading the word. We're hoping to get content like this out to more and more people. There aren't many places where you can go for serious political analysis from a Christian worldview that will bring you guests like Senator Langford and Senator Coons. And with that, let's cut to the interview, and we'll get there right after the break. And after the interview, Justin and I will recap. Thank you.
All right, this is the Church Politics Podcast, and we are very excited to have two special guests with us, Senator James Langford from Oklahoma and Senator Chris Coons from Delaware. Senators, thank you so much for joining us.
Really glad to be with you.
It's really wonderful. It's a great time to have you on anytime, but it was just announced that the two of you are going to be co-chairing the 2019 National Prayer Breakfast. I was able to be a part of that prayer breakfast when I was staffing the president and in the years since. And really just want to talk about how you envision that kind of coming together. And if you see that y'all will maybe get fed up with each other over the course of the next year. Do you think you'll be able to hold it together?
Well, I think one of the real blessings of my time in the Senate has been to get to know James. We work together every week on the weekly prayer breakfast here in the Senate. And I think the challenge of working together to develop a program, to choose a keynote speaker, to choose musical entertainment, and to put together a really powerful prayer breakfast for next year, will frankly strengthen our friendship. We'll have differences of opinion.
Or it'll tear us apart completely.
We always do. I actually think James and I may be here quite a while together. And I'm hopeful about what our friendship and what our partnership and issues around faith might mean for our service and for our families and for our time here together.
Absolutely, that's wonderful. Justin would love to bring you in and to continue the conversation.
Yeah, thank you, senators. Thanks for your time. We appreciate it. One of the first things that I learned in Lincoln Douglas debate in high school was that in order to even have a debate, that you need some common ground, that you need some shared values, and in today's discourse, it seems there's less and less of that. We can't even seem to agree on the premise to even get to the question or the problem that needs to be solved. Now, it's my understanding that attending a weekly Senate Bible study helps you to facilitate a friendship. Can you talk about that a little bit for us and how that provided common ground for you two and why that's important?
Yeah, I can talk about that, and I can also talk about Lincoln-Douglas debate if you want to do that, because I started doing that early on as well. I would say we've got two issues there, not just with Lincoln-Douglas debate. It's that most of the time we refuse to actually debate the problems. It's much easier just to be able to skip the problem and to say, that's hard, we'll do that some other time, and it's a constant move on with anything that's difficult to just ignore it. The time that we get together on Wednesday mornings, there's about 20 to 25 of us get together. We're not talking about policy at all. We're talking about our faith. It's a much deeper level. We're talking about our history and our family. It's a very private time, and it's a time that's reserved just for senators. So there's no other staff there. There's no other outside entity. It's just senators and former senators that have the opportunity to be able to sit down and be able to talk about how we're really doing personally. That does change the dynamic of conversations. When you get to know someone, their background, what drives them, who they are as a person, you get to know more about their family, it does affect it. It is very easy in normal political life to demonize an individual based on how they vote, and you just try to create a persona that's not real. This is trying to be able to move beyond the persona that media can create to who are you really?
Yeah, and it's almost, you know, pointing out polarization is conventional wisdom now, but it's often the polarization on the other side. Yes, we have a polarization problem, and as soon as they knock it off, right. You know, well, we can get back together.
Well, and the media thrives on that. You always, for every interview, you want to have one person shaking their head no and another one nodding their head yes. Yeah. I mean, that's what makes a better interview, is to create some kind of controversy. They never focus on the two people next to each other both agreeing. That doesn't make great TV, and so you never see that.
Yeah. Senator Langford, you and Senator Scott decided to kind of confront this polarization problem with Solutions Sundays. Would you just describe what that looks like and maybe give us a bit of a preview of what it'll look like moving forward and what you hope to build on?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I started asking people just a very simple question about race. And I would just randomly ask people, both in state and in D.C. and places where I traveled, a very simple question. Has your family ever invited a family of another race to your home for dinner? Now, as simple as that question is, I've been shocked at the number of people that either gave me a blank stare or they responded back to me, I have friends of another race. And I would smile and say, that's not what I asked. I asked, has your family ever invited a family of another race to your home for dinner? And what that has sparked is this ongoing dialogue among individual families. No, we haven't. And then this question, who would we ask? And if you don't have a relationship deep enough with someone of another race that you could even ask them over for dinner, there's a racial issue in your life and you didn't even know it because you've kept racial friendships at an acquaintance level rather than a friendship level. And it's shown by just not being in your home. So again, I'm not trying to embarrass anyone. I'm trying to expose a hard issue because I'm convinced the racial issues in America aren't going to be solved with a piece of legislation. They'll be solved in the heart. And that starts best with families. And there is no substitute to your kids growing up, seeing kids of another race sitting at your own dinner table and their parents just having normal conversation about the weather, about football, about what's happening, what just normal conversation. And for your kids to see that's normal. If they never see that in your home, your kids always have a suspicion. There's nothing you have to say. It's just what they never saw or what they did see makes a big difference. So we've pushed that on the issue of race for several years. Clearly, that could work in partisan issues. That can work in all kinds of divides. But it's breaking through the threshold of our own homes and inviting families where there's disagreement or whether it's just lack of friendship into your own home and just having that kind of conversation.
Yeah.
One of the things I like about James
is key.
Just to compliment James on what he was just raising, you know, he is conservative. He's a conservative Republican. He worked in there that this kind of individual one-on-one family-based encounter with people of different backgrounds is going to be more effective than government intervention. We might have a different view about what's the appropriate role of government in trying to address racial inequality, but you couldn't possibly question the sincerity, the genuineness, the depth of his concern about an engagement around racial issues and the novelty and the honesty of the questions that he's posing to so many friends. So one of the things that's been great about our getting to know each other is getting past a two-dimensional understanding of each other, which all too often is what happens when we simply confront each other on cable or on the floor of the Senate, and to instead recognize that he's someone who's trying to bring earnestly crafted solutions to complex problems.
Absolutely. Justin.
Awesome. Senator Coons, I was a delegate at the 2016 Democratic National Convention, and in my speech to get elected here in Georgia's 5th Congressional District, which is Congressman Lewis's district, I made a point that the Democratic Party can't be a party that neglects, disregards, or disrespects the faith community. Last year, you wrote an article in for The Atlantic entitled Progressive Values Can't Be Just Secular Values. In that article, you cite a Pew Research poll that found that one-third of Democrats think churches and religious organizations have a negative impact on the United States. Can you tell us why you thought that was an important article to write and how Democrats can make some progress in that area?
Well, thanks for the question, Justin. I'll actually be with our friend John Lewis this weekend in Memphis for a commemoration of Dr. Martin Luther King's assassination. And one of the things that I have found most powerful in my life is the witness and the leadership of people who bring their faith to work, who talk about how their faith inspires them to challenge injustice, to try and make the world a better place. And I'm concerned, frankly, that more and more Democrats feel embarrassed about or uncomfortable with sharing anything about their faith and how it connects to their service. Some of the most progressive members of the Senate, members I'm very close to, don't ever talk about how it was their experience of faith when they were children that motivated them to get into public service and politics in the first place. And I think many of their constituents would be very surprised to hear their deeply held religious views and how, in particular, the radical justice that the gospel focuses on is really what motivated them to be involved in service in the first place. So part of what motivated me around writing that article was an increasing concern that if young people in America are looking at different role models and different heroes, and they don't ever hear from those whose politics are progressive that they see any connection between the values of the gospel and those politics, then they assume that they are secular and that they're not in any way connected to God's thirst for righteousness and justice. Mm.
That's really
good. Thank you.
Yeah. We're here at the Capitol today, and Billy Graham is lying in honor in the Capitol Rotunda. Would just love to hear your reflections on Reverend Billy Graham. It's been amazing to see an outpouring of remembrance and support, and from President Obama to all kinds of people. Senator Lankford, Senator Coons, how are you kind of processing this? What do you think it means for the country?
Well, it's a significant day, and it's amazing to me how many folks that are 25 years old and younger don't know who Dr. Graham is, or they may have heard the name before but have no context for it. For others in a generation just older than them, they see him as one of the most singular significant individuals in all of Christendom, for the things that he did on racial reconciliation, reaching across ecumenical lines, reaching out to people at all places, the number of world leaders that came to him and said they're seeking counsel from him, the life of integrity that he lived. One of the comments that Chaplain Black made today during the time of remembrance in the Rotunda was he had 99 years of integrity. Where literally he lived a, as Chaplain Black called it, a scandal-free life. He is a public individual that spoke to millions of people, traveled all over the world, had this incredibly large organization, had media constantly looking at his personal life and his public life, and was scandal-free for 99 years. There's not a lot of people that can hit that standard. But he also kept his message, not as a partisan message. You never heard it. And Chris and I can talk freely about this, about our own personal faith and walk with God and belief in Jesus Christ and the redemption that we have in not only our own soul, but the offer of that to other people. He came with a very clear message of Jesus loves you, and you can know the God who created you, and was so simple with it and so apolitical with it that the only time he got involved in anything like issues that were controversial was the issues of race, to be able to push our nation and other nations to be able to resolve racial issues. But he kept coming back over and over again to God's love for people and keeping it that simple, and it was an incredibly unifying voice for our nation, and he'll be sorely missed.
Yeah.
And I think that part of why Dr. Graham, Billy Graham, was able to lead and live that life of virtue was that he relied not on himself, but on God, that he lived and loved and embraced the gospel. It is hard, the pressures on those in ministry and those particularly in evangelism who travel frequently, who are away from home, who engage in kind of mass crusades. Sadly, there have been many more who've been flawed or fallen, who've been human, than who've lived the kind of life that Billy Graham did. So I still remember the first time I got to hear his message, and I'll just agree with what James is saying. It was so powerful in its simplicity, in its earnestness, in its directness, that it really was about witnessing to a connection that was personal but also transformational. So his is a voice that will be missed, but his is a voice that really was rooted in the Spirit, and so it won't be missed because the Spirit hasn't left us.
Right.
Well, we're about to wind down. You know, I really just love to ask you, you know, there are the national headlines about faith and politics and all the different controversial issues and points of tension, but as representing a state, y'all get to work with faith-based communities are just out there serving their neighbors, loving on their neighbors. What makes you hopeful about sort of the future of faith in America?
Exactly that. The things that I see at home, the decency, the kindness, the thoughtfulness, the generosity of the American people as expressed to the neighbors, to people they've never met, to people who literally share their community or who are on the other side of the world. I always find when I get a chance on a Sunday or on another day to go visit with a community, a congregation, whether it's a synagogue or a mosque or a church that I don't know, I almost always come home refreshed and encouraged, challenged by how big and bold their view is. Americans are remarkable people, and they are remarkable, I think, in large part because of our shared free expression of our faith. And the way in which it has drawn us out of ourselves and pushed us to connect with the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we lose track of the fact that most of the world doesn't have a free exercise of faith. The state dictates to people either that you have a certain faith, and if you don't agree with the national leaders, you're out. You either can't get a job or you're dead. Or that you can have no faith here, and if you have some faith, just keep it quiet and keep it inside these buildings. This unusual thing that America started 240 years ago of having the free exercise of religion, not only having a faith, but being able to live it publicly and privately, was a radical concept at the time. But to also say we don't have establishment. Anyone can live any faith they choose to or have no faith at all. No one thought at the time that would ever work. And it has created this incredible deep faith community that's not dependent on the government to be able to fund faith or to dictate faith, but to allow people to be able to live by the dictates of their own conscience and soul is still something that's challenged even today. And it's remarkable the number of times the issue of faith comes up where people say, I'm not sure people, we can really allow people to live their faith because that means they're going to impress this group and this group and go, whoa, we've had this question for two centuries and it's working remarkably well. Allow people to be able to live out their freedom. You know, Chris has an incredibly deep personal faith. And we're able to have these great conversations about our own study of scripture and what we're doing and walking through difficult issues and even times in votes and how you approach things. Those are healthy dialogues for the two of us in our ongoing personal relationship with Christ. But it's also a very healthy thing for the nation as well and in local entities and living it out. And I encourage people, faith is not about a political party. It's just not. But it's also something that I encourage people to say, if your faith only affects how you live on weekends, that's not a faith. That's a hobby. A hobby is something you do on weekends. A faith permeates every part of what you do. So if you can turn your faith on and off, depending on the location that you're in, I just challenge people to go deeper in their own personal faith and to have more than a hobby of religion, but to have a faith that permeates their daily life.
Absolutely. Justin.
Yeah. Lastly, I would just ask, you know, there are a lot of especially young people of faith who really want to engage civics. They really want to get involved, but they want to do it in a different way. They see some of the mistakes that have been made and it has scared a lot of people off. What I would ask you to is, what's the best way your average person of faith can help out what you guys are doing, can help heal some of the divides in politics? How can we be helpful?
I'll go back to what James was saying about inviting someone into your home, into your circle of trust or into your life who comes from a different background. I think in politics in particular, and in recent years, we've had an awful lot of awkward Thanksgiving dinners in families across the United States. It's important to start by genuinely being loving, kind, open-hearted to people who have different political views and who are passionate about those political views, to listen to them, to meet them where they are, and then to better understand them. And then second is to not hide or be apologetic about your own faith views and how they move you to act. I think we need more tolerance, more respect for each other, more genuine love for each other, but we also need people to bring their faith to the public square and to their work and to their service so that others can see what it is that's gotten you moving and gotten you serving and gotten you engaged. Yeah. Now, last I'll say, what I've learned from this experience today is that James has really got a voice for radio. I've got a face for radio and he's got a voice for radio.
Well, thank you again. Well,
let me throw one quick thing in there. I would challenge the generation that's struggling with this issue as the nation is right now. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, darkness does not drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. When I read on social media and when I read people's emotions of how they react, they're trying to drive out hate with more hate. That does not work. That will not turn around a country. And so at some point, people of faith have got to determine, can I drive out hate with more hatred, or do I have to engage in love in a whole new way to be able to drive this out? And I am absolutely convinced that love will drive out hate, not hate will drive out hate. And it's one of the grand challenges. And I also push a community, especially a younger community, that's turning away from experiencing God together in fellowship, whether that be in a church setting or in Bible studies, but community together. They're trying to do it isolated.
Absolutely.
There is something powerful that God put into place with developing and walking with him in community. Where when I'm at my low points, almost always when I get to church, the person sitting in front of me is boldly singing, and they had a great week walking with God, I needed that, and vice versa on that. And we have to be able to live in community. So finding ways to serve in community, live in community, push, but also to be able to have love drive out hate rather than hate drive out hate, I think will make a big difference in our community.
Amen. Well, I can't thank you enough. Just on behalf of our audience and our listeners, I know this is going to be such an encouragement to them. We want to encourage you on in this time of polarization. Y'all are such an example. The short-term interest of our politics is so contrary to the long-term interest of our nation. And so we have to figure out how to live together, and y'all are helping us do that. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks, y'all.
This episode of Church Politics is brought to you by Eastlick Coffee, a coffee roasting company serving specialty coffees that are unique yet familiar, complex and comforting, featuring diverse origins that are delicious and approachable. Use the code FORTH, that's F-O-R-T-H, to get 40% off your first bag of coffee by visiting eastlickcoffee.com.
Well, Justin, what an amazing conversation to hear from the two senators. What did you think of that interview?
First of all, I was honored to just have the opportunity to have a conversation, and then to see, you know, in a very in-depth way, them talk about how we can make things better. Number one, being able to identify the problem that we all see. Sometimes when we talk to people, it's like, hey, do the people in Washington even see what everybody else sees? Huh. And I think these two senators from, you know, bipartisan, coming from two different parties, show that they do get where the problem lies, and they're trying to do something to change it.
And it wasn't shallow. There was that one fascinating moment in the interview where Senator Lankford was talking about Solution Sunday, the effort he has with Senator Scott around racism and getting people together. And Coons jumps in and says, you know, James is a conservative. I'm a liberal. I think the we also need some real policy work here. And I thought that showed that the two of them are really serious about this, that they're not just trying to do a little roadshow and make people feel good, that they're actually invested in sharpening one another. They're invested in taking each other seriously enough to disagree with one another, even in, you know, an interview setting like this. So I was pretty impressed by both the senators.
Yeah, it showed it was genuine. Something that you said before is when we talk about bipartisanship and a more healthy discourse, we're not talking about everyone agreeing on every single thing. That's not what that is. But it does mean taking steps to be civil. And I thought you made a very good point about that earlier. You know, you and I are somewhat kind of the political guys in a informal group of rising faith leaders. And a lot of those young leaders want to be involved and have a say in politics to make things better, not in a partisan way. But I think a lot of people will be very encouraged by these two senators and what they're trying to do. It shows that someone is listening and actually taking action to change things. And we really appreciate that. And these are probably be a lot of our listeners' two favorite senators in a short time.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're going to cut to a break. And when we get back, we're going to share a few headlines from the last week of current events that we think you're going to need for the week ahead. So after the break, headlines from Justin and myself. And we're back with the Church Politics Podcast. Justin, it was an eventful week last week, and we thought the best way to summarize would just be to share some headlines. What story stuck out to you last week?
The first story. So to your point, it was certainly an eventful week. The first story that a lot of people heard about were the Trump tariffs, where Trump is supposed to sign tariffs on imported aluminum and steel in the next week or so. And we all know that a tariff is a tax or duty on a product made outside of the U.S. and imported here. In this instance, Trump is proposing a 10% tariff on aluminum and a 25% tariff on steel. That's not insignificant. And this is said to be done to stop the flood of cheap metals that are coming inside of the U.S. and actually hurting U.S. companies who are in the steel business. And it goes along with Trump's America First posture that he really ran on throughout his campaign. But it has drawn quite a bit of criticism from Republicans and even some people within the Trump administration. Many fear that this will cause retaliation from some of our trade partners and even could even cause a trade war. And so there's a lot of people saying this is the wrong way to go. Trump's response to that in true Trump fashion was that that trade wars are good and easy to win. It was said that Gary Cohn, who is Trump's chief economic advisor, was said to be thinking about resigning if he moved forward with this. The administration said that wasn't true, but certainly a tough one and kind of inner party spat going on because of this tariff proposal.
And what's, you know, a lot of things interesting about this, you know, politically, it's it puts Democrats in an interesting position. You know, it used to be the Republicans that were the pro-trade party, and Democrats were a little behind. But now that you have Trump acting in a very un-Republican manner, you know, do Democrats really critique Trump hard on this because they're the opposition party, or do Democrats lay off because some of their base wants to see a more aggressive American posture? So it's just unlike, you know, some of Trump's other moves over the last few months, the politics aren't quite so straightforward here for the Democrats. That's a fascinating story for the politics, but obviously because of the economic implications as well. Another story from the Trump administration I had, New York Times reported on March 4th on Sunday that the State Department has not used any of the $120 million that was allocated to it to combat foreign meddling in elections. And so we are now, what, 8 months away from midterm elections. The State Department was allocated this money. And according to this New York Times report, they've spent zero of it to counter foreign efforts to meddle in elections that we know that, you know, it's agreed upon both parties in Congress that meddling took place. And so I think there's going to be a lot of follow-up on this. I think Senator Mark Warner is going to be who has been leading some of the efforts, bipartisan efforts to combat foreign meddling in elections. I think Mark Warner is going to be probably holding some hearings on this, or at least pressing this issue publicly. So I thought that was a fascinating report from the New York Times, and something that will drive some conversation this week.
At least it should. Yeah. My second headline was dealing with the Hill is reporting that the Senate will vote on an expansive bipartisan bill to loosen Dodd-Frank regulations. We know that Dodd-Frank is the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act that was signed by President Obama in 2010 after the 2008 financial collapse. And what they'll be doing is easing some of the restrictions on larger banks and what is considered a large bank. Mm. Now, we noticed that we haven't had any movement on guns.
Right.
We haven't had any movement on immigration.
Right.
Or Dreamers.
Yeah.
But Democrats and Republicans can come together to pass a bank deregulation bill. Now, I guess it does show, if nothing else, that where there's a will, there's a way. Right. It shows us that bipartisanship is actually possible, if nothing else, even if it's only for those with larger wallets.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to give a whole lot of commentary. I'm just going to let everybody think about that. Bipartisanship is possible.
Well, Justin, moving across the Atlantic, the Italians held their national elections this past weekend, and they resulted in big wins, a resurgence for the hard right populist anti-EU, anti-immigrant forces in that country, including the Five Star Movement, a populist hard right party that received about a third of the votes cast. And so the Italian government will need to form. That will take place. There'll be a process that will take months. What's clear is that the hard right has more cards in its hand than it had previous to this election. Justin, we're talking about explicitly fascist, neo-fascist parties winning not insignificant portions of the vote. And so this is going to send shockwaves through Italy, shockwaves through EU, that there had been some hopes that sort of the right-wing resurgence in Europe had been calmed a bit by Macron's victory in France, by Merkel staving off the hard right in Germany. But these Italian elections show that that challenge is far from over. And so it will be important to see how other elections in Europe go this year to see what the future of anti-immigrant populist hard right politics is in Europe.
Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on that. In other news, teachers in West Virginia have been on strike for about 8 or 9 days since February 22nd. 20,000 teachers are on strike, which means that 277,000 students are out of class. Hmm. And what they are asking for is a 5% raise in their salary. Unfortunately, West Virginia teachers are some of the lowest paid teachers in the nation. It sounds like that the state house in West Virginia passed the 5% raise, but the state Senate would only give them a 4% raise. And so as we speak, they are still on strike. But let's hope that we get our teachers paid. We need to do a little bit better job of that in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to get these teachers paid and kids back in the classroom. The last story I have is this Tuesday, actually, there are primary elections, particularly in Illinois and Texas, that will really put another marker on the direction of the Democratic Party. In Illinois, Dan Lipinski is up, is facing a primary challenger. Lipinski is one of the three or so pro-life Democrats left in the House, and he has a challenger from the left. And then in Texas, there is a candidate, Laura Moser, who the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, several weeks ago actually put out opposition research on Moser, a fellow Democrat, because they favor her opponent. And so it's interesting, sort of Democratic forces are opposing Lipinski from the left. They're opposing Moser kind of from the right. We'll see how these elections play out, but it'll give us a sense of how the table will be set for the November midterm.
That's right. Well, thanks for joining us. We want to give a final thank you to the U.S. senators, Senator James Lankford, Senator Chris Coons. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you all enjoyed it, and we'll see you next week.
Absolutely.
And graduates. I'm an advocate for those feeling abandonment in the favelas and slums of ghetto inhabitants. It's like, can anything good come out of Nazareth? The only thing good came out of Nazareth.
This is the groove. Tell me, can you handle it?
I'm schooled in the ways of runaway slaves. I'm brave. I'm unchained. I'm Frederick Douglass with a fade.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.